It's what? This is embarrassing.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. We're going to go out of order a bit in the first. We'll open three bills for public hearing. Senate Bill 247, 249, and 250. Call Representative Huffman and Senator Taylor, please.
On this one, we're doing 247, correct?
Josh, do you have anything to say first?
I can if you'd like.
Because the last time I recall,
Representative. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 247 renames deviant sexual intercourse as oral or anal intercourse for purposes of the Oregon criminal law. Senate Bill 249A requires the court to vacate a conviction for prostitution if the court finds, by clear and convincing evidence, that the convicted person was a victim of sex trafficking at or around the time of the conduct giving rise to the prostitution conviction. The bill provides that the motion may be filed at least 21 days after the conviction and defines sex trafficking as the use of force, intimidation, fraud, or coercion that causes a person to engage in or attempt to engage in a commercial sex act. Finally, Senate Bill 250 creates an affirmative defense to the crime of prostitution if, at the time of the offense, the defendant was the victim of specifically defined forms of the crime of sex trafficking. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Barker, committee members, John Huffman, State Representative for House District 59. Thanks for having us today on this gorgeous day. If I lose my attention, it's because I'm looking at something called sunshine out there that we're not that familiar with. Senator Taylor and Representative Stark and I co-chair the statewide sex trafficking work group, and Senate Bill 247 is the first of three bills before you today. This bill really serves as a technical fix as it updates language in the Central Criminal Code, which has not been updated since 1971. In order to replace the term deviant sexual intercourse with oral or anal sexual intercourse, this bill simply renames the title of the acts defined in statute. It does not change any of the rights, laws, or penalties associated with those crimes. And we ask and urge your support of this bill. And with that, I turn it over to one of my co-chairs.
Okay, thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Senator for District 21. The importance of this language update was first brought to your attention by J.R. Ujifitsu, I always say his name incorrectly, sorry about that, who previously submitted written testimony, which I'd like to read from. As J.R. pointed out, deviant is defined by Merriam-Webster Dictionary as, quote, to stray especially from a standard, principle, or topic, to depart from an established course or norm. In addition, Merriam-Webster explains that deviant and deviant share a common Latin root. This association of the word deviant and negative connotation of the word deviant is common. He continues on in his written testimony, in many instances within the criminal justice system, the use of the word deviant to describe sex acts has offended individuals. These individuals range from grand jurors to victims. This bill simply changes the title ORS 163.3051 to describe in a neutral manner the sex acts, oral or anal sexual intercourse. This is consistent with other statutes and titles within the Oregon Revised Statutes as well as other states. Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee, and I request your support of the bill. So now I guess we move on to Senate Bill 249. Is
yes, it? Please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm not sure if I have to introduce myself again, but Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21. Senate Bill 249 works together with Senate Bill 250, which Representative Huffman will describe. I'm going to describe this one. Both of these bills give meaningful tools to victims of sex trafficking who were charged with the crime of prostitution as a result of this victimization. Senate Bill 249 allows a person convicted of prostitution to petition the court to vacate their conviction under certain circumstances. The individual must demonstrate to the court that they were a victim of trafficking and address the the victim of trafficking and address the reasons why they were unable to present these facts at the time of their previous trial, which is often due to a variety of reasons, including a trauma reaction, fear of their own safety, or lack of resources needed to leave their trafficker. By offering this option to petition for a vacation of judgment, we are demonstrating that we believe these victims, that their experiences matter, and they do not deserve to be further punished. Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I urge your support for this bill, and obviously happy to take any questions, but we'll go with Senate Bill 250.
Chair Barker and committee members, Senate Bill 250, affirmative action. As Senator Taylor mentioned, Senate Bill 249 and 250 work together to give options to survivors who end up in court due to their exploitation. Senate Bill 250 creates an affirmative defense for a defendant charged with a crime of sex trafficking who is actually a victim of trafficking. It is not uncommon for sexually exploited individuals to be charged with the crime of prostitution throughout their time under the control of a trafficker, an experience we know to be very traumatizing. Senate Bill 250 provides a more immediate remedy for victims than the previous bill, and we are hoping this would lead these victims to having an opportunity to interact with resources and support services that could help them break away from their trafficker. And with that, we are finished. Thank you for your time. We do have some expert testimony behind us. I know JR is more than happy to share some actual experiences not being able to prosecute on cases surrounding Senate Bill 247, and can explain a little more in detail why it's important to change the language and update it.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. JR, come on up. You have to speak briefly on 247, then we'll keep you up here and keep on going. So,
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is JR Ujifus. I'm a Multnomah County District Attorney. I'm also representing ODAA. I believe you'd like me to first speak on Senate Bill 247.
Yes, please.
That was a bill in which I had received comments from multiple attorneys in my office, as well as from grand jurors, that they were unwilling to participate in the justice system based on the fact that they were offended by the title of the sexual acts prohibited. And so I mentioned that, and we worked towards drafting this bill that does nothing other than change the title of the bill. All the sexual assaults in which these sexual acts are prohibited are still the exact same. It just changes the title so that individuals, whether they're victims, grand jurors, jurors, are not offended to the point in which they do not participate in the criminal justice system.
Okay, thank you. Question, Mr. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. JR, I have a question, and I have written it so that I would be very cautious and careful about it. As I read this bill multiple times, and as you've just spoken, we're changing criminal code. I mean, we're updating, amending criminal code. So if, I'm not an attorney, but that would mean criminal behavior. So I ask that, since we're talking about the criminal code and not the behavior of private citizens, their own homes, consenting citizens, would not this behavior, because it's criminal, still be deviant/deviant just by its very nature?
Chair Barker, Representative Post, I think I understand your question, and if I'm not answering it correctly, please let me know. The way in which the sexual assault laws are written in Oregon, it does not define, it defines sexual acts, and then it defines ways in which those sexual acts are crimes. So for oral or anal sexual intercourse, that by itself is not a crime, and yet it labels it as deviant sexual intercourse. That, taken with either the victim being underage or force or intimidation being used, makes it a crime.
Right.
And so what they were reading, what these individuals that I heard feedback from were reading, was that just the sexual acts by themselves was termed deviant, not the crime, but just the acts were termed deviant. And then it needed force or intimidation or a victim being underage to make it a crime. And so what their responses to me and other attorneys were, so what you're saying is, if there is an intimidation or force, or I'm not a minor, it's still deviant? And so that's what I think they were offended by.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions on that? Okay, we don't have any more witnesses. I think I'll go into a work session real quick and clear this one out. Open a work session on Senate Bill 247.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Olson.
Yes, so Mr. Chair, I'm going to be a no. Okay. Right now, I mean, I changed my perspective on this come the time it hits the floor. But right now, I mean, I'm struggling with this
okay.
bill.
Thank you.
I'm also a no, Mr. Chair.
Call the roll, please. I'm sorry, one more, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm too late to ask you. Sorry about that. I guess my concern comes from, I'm not asking you a question, so don't answer it, but you talked about they were offended and different folks are offended, and we've just, and I understand the logic. I know how to read a law. I understand the logic. But I'm wondering what other areas of law we're going to start looking at because people don't like the way the language sounds. And I'll likely end up being a yes on the floor, but I'm cranky and I'm going to be a no today because I can be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and this again is a question that I could have asked, but it just came to me, which it appears to me as though the definition of adding oral or anal is actually more descriptive of the activity than deviant. Deviant doesn't describe an act. Mm-hmm. It labels an act, but it doesn't describe it. And so as I read this law, it is actually a cleaner version of describing an act that could become a criminal act than the word deviant.
Okay, thank you. Call the roll, please.
Representative Orson?
Yes.
Representative Greenlight?
Excused.
Representative Leniger?
Yes.
Representative Post?
No.
Representative Sanchez?
Yes.
Representative Springer?
No.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Representative Vile?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Yes.
Chair Barker?
Yes. Bill carries. We'll have Representative Huffman be the carrier, please. And we'll move on to Senate Bill 249.
Chair, members of the committee, I'll talk originally about Senate Bill 249. I know Aaron Knott from DOJ is also here to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Of course, Oregon is known as being a victim-centered when it comes to sex trafficking. And this bill not only sends a clear message to victims that they are victims, but it also helps them identify themselves as victims and identify victims of trafficking in which the defense or the fact that they may vacate a judgment may be applicable to them based on a third party threatening them, manipulating them, or forcing them to engage in prostitution. Now, based on my experience as a prosecutor, there are many times in which, even after a trial, we have found out that someone is a victim of sex trafficking and that the acts that they performed, prostitution acts, were at the behest or threats or intimidation of a third party making them do so. This bill would allow them, even after a conviction, to file facts and a motion in which to show that they were a victim and give them relief from the conviction of prostitution.
Okay, thank you. And why don't you go ahead and go on to Senate Bill 250, and then you sure. could be excused. From that.
250 is under the same idea. 250, Chair and members of the committee, it's an affirmative defense to allow a victim during the time of trial to show evidence that they have been trafficked at the time in which they were engaging in the acts of prostitution. And so it allows a defendant who may be a victim of trafficking to put forth evidence during their trial that they were trafficked at that time and therefore that they were not doing it voluntarily.
Representative Vile.
I confess I don't know much about this world, and so I apologize for however naive this question may sound. But it strikes me that even those individuals who are voluntarily engaged in the sex trade are nonetheless trafficked. And so I have a sense that this becomes a defense for some who might have been there voluntarily, whether it was just initially or they're still there voluntarily, but can point to the fact that someone else is out generating the business and managing the business, so to speak, and call that trafficking. And perhaps I'm not reading the bill clearly, but I've read it three or four times now, and I don't have an answer for why that wouldn't be a defense if I were representing someone who had been accused of prostitution.
Chair Barker, Representative Vile, I think I understand your concern. What this Senate Bill 250 refers to is sex trafficking, and the definition you can also see in Senate Bill 249, which requires the use of force, intimidation, fraud, or coercion. And so a third party would have to engage in those sorts of activities in order for this to be an affirmative defense. Different than a normal defense in which the state would have to prove against the defense, an affirmative defense requires the defendant to have to put forth evidence to show that it is through that definition of sex trafficking. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Representative Stark, please.
Chair Barker, just to kind of expand on that definition, if you look up, you know, ORS 163.266, another portion of the definition of trafficked does refer to involuntary servitude. And so if it is voluntary, then that removes it from that, to my understanding.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
I call Aranaut, Joel Shapiro, and Gail Meyer.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Aranaut. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Attorney General at the Department of Justice here in support of Senate Bill 249 and 250. I assume testify on both.
Yes, please.
And Mr. Ujifuza and I sort of agreed to split. I'll take more of 249. He'll take more of 250. Senate Bill 249 reflects something that a number of other states have done. I think 19 other states have a motion to vacate. And the reality that I think it speaks to is that the victims of trafficking are very hard to identify. This is a structural problem we have in the criminal justice system. Part of the reason for that is that they don't announce themselves as victims. And often their first contact that they have with law enforcement, which is really the first moment for intervention, comes in a context where they are being treated as a criminal. They've been picked up for prostitution is a very frequent fact pattern. And in that moment, they are being investigated. They're being investigated by a police officer. They're facing criminal charges subsequently. And for a lot of reasons, trauma being one of them, it can be very hard for that person to come forward in the midst of that experience. And so you'll see victims pick up convictions for prostitution, sometimes more than one. And so what Senate Bill 249 identifies is that they need a mechanism to be able to come back and say, look, I was the victim, not the defendant. In Oregon law now, we have a remedy called expungement. And expungement does work to get a conviction off of your record. But the basis for an expunction is something close to a reward for good behavior. It's that you receive the conviction, you are crime-free subsequently, and so there's a point where we have a social interest in rehabilitation. So we're going to let that conviction come off of your record. A motion to vacate is something else. It's the same mechanism where if you're convicted and it goes up on appeal, but then the appellate court finds that you shouldn't have been convicted, your underlying conviction is vacated, it goes away. It's closer to saying that it was reached in error, shouldn't have happened. And that really, we think, reflects the realities of victimization here. And to speak a bit to the point made by Representative Vile on the companion case, this is something that has to be demonstrated to a court. There is a standard of proof involved. You need competent evidence to gain access to the remedy. You can't simply come in and say, 10 years later, hey, by the way, I was trafficked. You have to be able to back that up with competent evidence to the satisfaction of a judge. The Department of Justice also supports Senate Bill 250. I think Mr. Ujifuza defined it fully and accurately, so I would just join in that support.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, in support of both House Bills 249 and 250, and we would like to thank the sponsors for bringing this bill. We see the question presented in both of these bills to be the same. How and when do victims of human sex trafficking caught up in the criminal justice system themselves self-identify as victims of human sex trafficking? You know, the criminal defense attorney is the one person in the entire criminal justice system that has a confidential relationship with that victim, also the defendant, in a prostitution prosecution. And even in the context of a confidential relationship, it's very, very hard to get these, I'll say it, women, girls, to self-identify as victims of being trafficked. You can ask them about the man, the gentleman, who was standing there at arraignment, very curious to know what the release decision was going to be. You can ask them about the gentleman who happens to be the same gentleman in the lobby who dropped them off there for your appointment and who's going to be driving them home again. You can pointedly ask these questions. But if these women, girls, are not yet ready to disclose their circumstance of being trafficked, there's not a lot a defense lawyer can do on their behalf in the context of the actual prosecution itself. So as between 249 and 250, we're very grateful for 250, but we don't think that there's going to be that many clients who will use 250, the affirmative defense. It will take some time before they're disengaged and disentangled. And that's where 249 becomes so important. So we very much appreciate the bill, and we urge the committee's support of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel?
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Joel Shapiro with the Kids Are Not For Sale Coalition. And I really thank the sponsors of the bill and the committee for hearing the bill. I think these bills are important in recognizing victims of sex trafficking as what they are, using that word victims. And Representative Vial kind of put his finger on one issue which comes up when you're talking about commercial sexual activity, which is the voluntariness and the willfulness of it versus the coercion, the intimidation, the force and fraud, as is defined in statute for sex trafficking. At a previous hearing this session about sex trafficking bills, the committee talked a little bit or heard a little bit about the concept of the Nordic model. And I do want to touch on that because these bills really get at that approach and that underlying viewpoint towards commercial sexual conduct. I brought some written material, which unfortunately I didn't have a chance to get into the record before the hearing. I will provide that if anybody wants to review it afterwards. But what the Nordic model is really about is a progression in recognizing that when you have a commercial transaction, it's often not two equal parties. There is an element of coercion, of an imbalance of power. And if we want to prevent that kind of exploitation and that kind of imbalance, there needs to be changes in the law. And there's two halves of it. One is to recognize the people purchasing sex as the people that are committing the criminal activity. And the other is that the people that are selling themselves are seen as victims, and you have to provide services and alternatives to them. And so that's what this written material explains a little bit. And so these two bills are exactly that. They are providing alternatives and opportunities for people who are victimized to clear their record and to go in a new direction in their life. And as Gail Myers pointed out, sometimes they're not ready for that at a certain point of their interaction with the criminal justice system. But we certainly hope that at some point they will be. And when they are, being able to vacate a conviction, or but between the time perhaps they committed the activity and the time they're going to trial, if they have the ability of an affirmative defense, they can continue with the direction that's going to get them out of this life. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bile.
I first of all, I really appreciate Representative Stark pointing out ORS 163-266, that sex trafficking definition. That was really helpful to me, and it's a rookie mistake not to have known about that, and I'm glad that I have colleagues that have been down this road a little bit further than I have. I'm wondering why we have not made a reference to that definition in either one of these bills. seems to me that if that's really our definition of sex trafficking, that ought to be pointed out in either 249 or it's in 250, but it's not in 249. It is in 250, but it's not in 249.
Chair Barker, Representative Vile, I will take a swing at this. There are a sort of a package of involuntary servitude is one statute that can constitute sex trafficking. I'd also look at compelling prostitution as another one, because I think that and I don't have that citation, but Joe might know it. That one outlines use of force, intimidation, fraud, and coercion as factors. I remember in the last chamber there was some discussion with legislative counsel about the definition that you reference in 249, which is in Section 1, Subsection 7, I believe is largely lifted from the compelling prostitution, which is all about you force somebody to engage in prostitution by, and then those factors, by fraud, by intimidation, by use of force. So I think that's sort of where that came from. I don't think there's an additional reference anywhere in here to the involuntary servitude statute.
Further questions? Great. Thank you very much. Call Catherine Parkway.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Catherine Parkay, and I am here today in support of Senate Bill 249 and 250, and I'll address both. I am a recent president of the Junior League of Portland, which is a women's volunteer and leadership organization that has adopted the issue of human trafficking as one that we have been focused on for the last 5 to 6 years. We produced a documentary, and we have been involved in a good amount of direct service with victims and survivors of human trafficking. In my day job, I work full-time in higher education. I'm a director of research, and so this is definitely a passion project. I'm taking time off work to drive down, and I'm representing over 600 women just like myself, many of whom are unable to join me today. And in some of the opportunities that we've had to get to know the young women and girls affected by human trafficking, I have seen firsthand the power of the coercion and the manipulation that they have experienced, and the tremendous amount of hard work that lays ahead for those who work to reclaim their lives. There's a day shelter where I have volunteered several times bringing dinner with several of my Junior League members, and we've sat around the table with 15, 16-year-old girls who are still caught in the life. And it's up to us to give them a vision of a better future, and that they can actually work towards their own freedom. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to get out of the life, to stay out of the life. There are so many hurdles, seen and unseen, that you and I can never fully understand. And this legislation today will help them have those options and opportunities when they're ready to rebuild their lives, to seek employment, to get help, to shake the incredibly powerful stigma that they have been fed all these lies as they've been exploited. And furthermore, the other work that we are trying to do in the Junior League is to lay the foundation to change behaviors and attitudes, to stop the demand, to change our community's perception of this modern-day slavery. Legislation like today's is an important part in sending that message that this is not acceptable, and to make subsequent efforts that passionate volunteers like myself might endeavor much more effective. So I hope that you will support this and future opportunities.
Thank you very much for taking the time to come down and testify. Does anybody have questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 249A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 249A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 249A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Stark, would you carry that for us, please?
I'm willing, unless Stuckman wants
to. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Open a work session on Senate Bill 250.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 250 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 250 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Huffman?
No, okay.
Representative Stark will be the carrier of that one. Thank you. Okay. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 63.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 63 eliminates the requirement that the Psychiatric Security Review Board or the Oregon Health Authority provide notice of hearings conducted by those agencies to the committing court or juvenile department. The bill also expands the time period from 15 days to 30 days within which these agencies must provide the parties with post-hearing written notice of the order they entered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sid Moore, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the committee. I'm Sid Moore. I'm the Deputy Director of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. And I am here at the moment to talk to you about Senate Bill 63 and to just discuss what effects that would have on the board. Were it to pass, currently the agency is required to submit its written orders within 15 days after its hearings. At the moment, and continuing on to the future, the orders associated with patients in front of the board are given at the hearing, so that the patient and the patient's attorney. And the Attorney General's office all know the outcome of that piece of adjudication. So, at the moment, it's about 2 weeks before the written order is due, and we are asking for an additional 15 days to bring that up to 30 days for a couple of reasons. So, there's. Some of these orders are more complex than others. We are also a staff of we have a full staff of 11 full-time employees, and our board members are part-time and not always available for signatures. And so, if we have a combination of a complex finding, complex hearing, complex order, and the board members are not available in the first 13 to 15 days, then periodically that can cause delays, and so we're asking for those extra 15 days. We are not intending in any way to stop the practice of giving those findings at the hearing. So everyone who now knows at the hearing will still know at the conclusion of future hearings. In addition, the second part of the bill has to do with notices to the court. So prior to the creation of the PSRB in 1978, courts were responsible for supervising GEI patients. Now, of course, we, along with the Oregon Health Authority, are in charge of that. And so it was presumed at the time that since the court would have an interest in tracking these cases as they continue. As patients continue with the board, we have found this not to really be the case. We get very few, which is to say, one inquiry about these cases, and that has happened. That one time has occurred since the time my director was in front of the Senate testifying on this very bill. So between now and then, we've had our one example of a judge who wants to continue to have these notices. Should the bill pass, that judge and any other judges who care to would have the ability to opt in and continue to get notices or start getting notices. It would just, this bill would eliminate the requirement that happen every time. We think it saves time, and it also saves paper. So at this point, I am happy to take any questions you might have on this bill.
Representative Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Sid, I'm just curious, as you're describing the first part of the bill.
Yes.
Regarding the 15 days, the additional 15 days. Did you ever come very close to sliding into home plate and not, you know, completing those questions or that information out by 15 days?
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, thank you for the question and for the baseball analogy. Yes, from time to time. I am not going to sit here and pretend that it happens all the time, but the issue that we want to address is to make sure that all of our orders every time are on time, so that we're not missing even one of those.
So I'm just thinking, Mr. Chair, he doesn't want to get tagged out, so it's...
Yep, fair enough. No one does.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 63.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 63 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 63 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And who would like to carry the bill? President Leininger?
Yes, please.
Okay, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 66.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 66A requires the court to notify persons found guilty except for insanity of a sex crime of the obligation to register as a sex offender. In addition, the bill requires the court to notify persons who are subject to specified civil commitment-related orders or who are found unable to aid and assist in their own criminal defense of the prohibition on possessing or purchasing a firearm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Moore, please.
Well, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the committee, I am still Sid Moore, and I am now, I'm also still the Deputy Director of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. So right now I'd like to discuss very quickly the possible effects of Senate Bill 66. This is a notification bill. It's very simple. With respect to sex offenses, there are mostly this comes up with sex offenses that don't read necessarily like sex offenses. So kidnapping of a child, whether even if there is no sexual intent or sexual conduct, is still registrable as a sex offense. And currently, and not through anyone's purposeful doing, it's not required that a judge notify a defendant in advance of pleading GEI that such a person would have to register as a sex offender once released from our jurisdiction. This is a requirement if the person is convicted. So what we're asking in this case is that we just require the court to tell people ahead of time that they'll have to register as sex offenders if indeed that is what is going to happen to them as a result of a finding of a GEI finding. And similarly, the firearm prohibition is sort of the same thing. Those with certain mental health adjudications are barred from possessing or purchasing firearms. And once again, it is currently not required that the court let people know ahead of time of that prohibition. So if the bill passes, then it will require courts to do this. I will say, to be quite candid, I think that there are, it doesn't look like there are judges who are secreting this information. I don't. That's not our concern. But the issue is that we want the court to be required to do that.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Moore, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sid, I want to make sure I understand the last part that you just said. So currently, the court is not required to notify about the firearm portion.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, that is correct at the moment. Yes. Now that doesn't mean that no one's being notified. Often courts do make these notifications; they're simply not required to at this time.
Okay. Follow up. Thank you. And if I'm reading this right, I want to make sure I understand, then the court would also be required then to notify when you're in the clear. You may then possess a firearm again.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, That is not at the moment a part of the bill, but for those for people in this situation, for defendants in this situation, in order to regain their firearm privileges, there is their federal firearm privileges. The PSRB is that authority, and so they would have to affirmatively come before us in order to regain their firearm privileges. And at that time, we would let them at the appropriate notice time, we would let them know that that had been that decision had been made.
If I think I'm, you're asking something different, I think.
Is it? So, I'm sorry.
No, they tell the client, if you're convicted, you will lose the right to the firearm. If they're not convicted, they don't tell them anything else and if they're not convicted, it doesn't apply.
No, I guess what I'm referring to is on the very last page, section 14, last line says, the court shall again notify the defendant of the prohibition if the court finds the defendant has gained or regained fitness to proceed under subsection 4 of this section. So in other words, the court should then tell the person, you are okay now.
Okay. Representative Barker, Chair Barker, Representative Post, I apologize. Then, yes, given that reading, and I apologize for forgetting that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Post, as I read this, it says, so we're talking about people who are unable to aid and assist in their criminal defense, okay? And there's a first stage where the judge says, you, criminal defendant, are not able to aid and assist in your defense. Go get treatment. When the person, and what the bill says is you tell them at that point, when they're probably in the middle of a mental health crisis, and then the language you're referring to is when they come back and they've been treated and restored to competency, judge is supposed to remind them, since you were found unable to aid and assist, you are no longer allowed to possess a firearm.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Frager.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I go through all the meeting materials here, I see stuff that came from just the witness registration with one name on it. Mm-hmm. From the Senate side, do we have anybody that has opposed this bill that I'm not looking at? And do we have anybody signed up today to oppose this bill?
We do not have anybody else signed up. We don't have any opposition. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 66.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 66A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Ramson moves Senate Bill 66A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Iyengar, you want to take that as well? And then I want to just... temporarily suspend the rules to allow Representative Bile to change his vote on Senate Bill 247 if there are no objections. Hearing no objection, Representative Bile
votes aye on the bill.
Thank you. Representative Bile votes aye on Senate Bill 247. Any further business for the good of the order? Thank you, committee. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. We stand adjourned.